We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's it, everyone. He's in the record books. An absolutely historic moment. The goal that Harry Kane scored that won Arsenal the title. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name is Alex Smith, the Black Man Twitter Yankee Gunner. I mean, they can't help themselves, can they? A Rabona goal for the ages in a loss to Arsenal. A Harry Kane record-setting goal that may mean that Arsenal sort of technically, on a technicality, won the league at Tottenham again. As Tottenham have beaten Manchester City, and now Spurs fans left to be miserable in victory. Only Tottenham could find themselves in a situation where both victory and defeat would have made them miserable. I am perfectly happy with the outcome of that game. We will discuss that and how it has led from the agony to the ecstasy. That is football in a nutshell, right? The agony and the ecstasy. We had the agony on Saturday. We had the ecstasy on Sunday. I know many of you would say referring to a Spurs victory as ecstasy is not okay. I hear you. Maybe it's not a scream and yell and shout at the top of your lungs. Maybe it's just a gentle, dignified fist bump. You know, just a little pump of the fist into the air, maybe an eyebrow raise, a politely worded tweet. But you know where I'm at, because this was huge. And I think it's huge for the team. I think it lifts the team going into a week where they need to refocus and look at Brentford at home before it's City at home. Two games that are critical, coming off a loss that obviously is deeply disappointing. But this result flips the narrative. And I think it really is going to be a crucial one in the scheme of things. So we'll be discussing City's loss and how it changes the feeling around the club and the feeling around the fan base and the feeling around the title race following the loss. Then, of course, we'll dig into the loss at Everton. What went wrong? Maybe were the subs wrong? We'll get into that. I think there's some interesting meat on the bone there, some aspects to our patterns of play that maybe need to be relooked at, or do they? We'll cover all that. But we can't cover any of it until I say, as I always do, that we love you for being here and express deep gratitude for you being a part of this journey with us, because it means the world. We have a lot of live events that are about to be announced on multiple continents, so I'm excited about that. We'll have more news on that anon. Over on the Patreon side, we've got all kinds of extra content. You know that. I don't even need to really tell you what it's all about, and there'll be more this week. If you want to be there, we'd love to have you there. And if you're just going to be here, we're just grateful for you being here. Plus, it's coming to the time of the year where we're going to be asking you to give money to the Arsenal Foundation to help children that are in need, both in London and at the Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan for kids who are displaced by the Syrian war. And so you'll be hearing a lot more about that and seeing a lot more about that coming up. But you were so generous last year, and we're going to try to really show that we can do that again this year. So a lot of good things happening around the podcast, around the club, around the world, and here to do those good things with me. Well, you know, Paul, you can find him on Twitter at Pause My Pants. Hello, Pause.
Woohoo! Come on, you spuds.
Ugh, yeah, I went with the scrub brush shower, just cold water and a scrub brush. I did some delousing powder. Everybody's going to have their own approach for how to get over having rooted, quote unquote, for spuds.
Make sure to get into every orifice, every cavity, right in there.
Every body cavity. Yep, that's right. Grab your ankles, get scrubbed up, do what you got to do. The man who is not rooting for Spurs, and I don't fully understand why, but he's got his reasons, is Clive. You can find him on Twitter at Clive PFCL. Clive.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I mean, you were pretty clear you would not root for them.
I'm not explaining myself.
Fine. You're a good proper Arsenal man, proper. But are you at least somewhat relieved to see the outcome of that game?
Yeah, it's nice. But I can't watch the game. And honestly, I thought City deserved a few more bookings. And I thought they were robbed. But hey.
Rodri. Look, Rodri, he just gets away with murder. It's unbelievable. But Cudi Romero did not get away with it. He has a red card on his copybook, so he'll be missing the next game. Casemiro's out for 3 games for going full chokehold WWE style in that game. So it's all happening. We needed some things to go our way this weekend after it didn't go our way to start the weekend, and it has ended on a high note for Arsenal fans. And Paul, I'll start with you. It may seem weird to start the Arsenal Vision podcast with the Tottenham City game, but I think it is the right place to start, not just because chronologically it's more recent in the memory, but because I think everybody's waiting for Arsenal to not be real, to not be legit. Everybody's waiting because I said this on the instant reaction, but the more I think about it, I think it is true. We were bad recently. It's very rare that a title favorite was bad as recently as we were. And so when we lose or don't play well, we go back to the place where we were eighth place finishers. We go back to thinking of ourselves in that way. There's not a lot of trust in this, and I understand why not. And that's why I think this Spurs result against City is so important. Because seeing them 2 points back of us, seeing them go away to Spurs and win, and feeling like, well, here they go, they're locked in, Arsenal's slide has started, that narrative is just waiting to be written. And we've got them right around the corner, and we've got Brentford ahead of us, and we can right the ship, but we just needed the narrative to not turn into the Arsenal collapse. And now, City dropping points, they're in the spotlight. What's wrong with them? Pep made weird changes. So how important, we're going full soft factors here early in the pod, but how important do you think it was for Arsenal and the narrative around Arsenal and the players feeling renewed in their excitement about what can be achieved that City dropped these points?
Yeah, it was very good timing, jolly good timing. Look, City aren't all that, and they went out of their way to come the next day and prove they're not all that. Rico Lewis, very good young fella, but like, doesn't scare me. That ain't João Cancelo, peak João Cancelo, tearing up defenses, doing things you never saw coming. Very tidy. Nathan Ake at left back, I mean, fine, good player, does well, you know, using his abilities. Kevin De Bruyne, a little off the ball, right? Like, this is not David Silva. This is not, you know.
Kun Aguero, we could go there on whether this the center forward is a fit for what they're doing.
Yeah, Bernardo Silva, you know, acting like he's almost already got his transfer somewhere else. I mean, they're just not. Like, Grealish is great at the moment, but he stands out in this team as the one guy who's doing great things, and half of those things are defensively covering back other players. This is not that City, and I just don't get the feeling it's about to click in a way that they're going to do that thing where they go 10, 15, 20 games. We're the consistent team. Now, that might feel strange after a game against Everton in which we looked off the boil and we looked like we didn't, but like, I don't know. I think it's one of these, if you go back and watch it, I'm not saying you see something that absolutely wasn't there and like there's some huge insight, but what you see is Deitch's football slowing us down, and then we get into our game and it's like, it's our thing. We're particularly consistent. Our players are there. Our players are basically staying fit. We've got, for us, a pretty deep bench. We've got options off the bench. We did actually play our football, especially as the game went on. Yes, they got their goal in the second half by Deitch and Everton ball. But, like, we're doing our things in there. And, like, it wasn't the game we wanted, the performance we wanted. We didn't get it quite to the level. But it's not like there isn't this, like, chasm of play and performance. I actually think it was fairly consistent, just slightly off. And you know, the Everton, the Deitch ball factor kicked in. I'm quite heartened that City are the team that kind of show up and then don't. And we show up all the time.
I think young teams need psychology to go for them. I think they need pressure to be lifted at times. And I think if City had blown Spurs off the pitch and won this game after we lost, you know, bottom of the league Everton, even if they're not really bottom of the league team and never should have been, you can see how how easy it would be for the narrative to turn. But I just want to throw something at you here, Clive, because there's this attitude like, well, here comes City. They'll just go finish on 97 points and we have no chance. Poor little Arsenal with their 5-point lead and a game in hand. Poor little Arsenal. We have no chance because they're going to go hit 96, 97 points. Let's just listen to this for a minute. Going back to November, they lost to Brentford at home. Okay. They drew Everton at home. That's Lampard's shitty, dreadful, can't play Everton. Drew them at home. They beat Chelsea away only because Kepa didn't have hands in a dreadful performance. They lost 2-0, by the way, in the FL Cup to Southampton. They lost away to Man United. They were 2-0 down to Spurs at home. Granted, they rescued that. And now they've lost away to Tottenham. Like, it's not that City doesn't have it in them to go on a run and win every single game between here and the end of the season and blow the doors off us. We know they can. I just don't see that team here. And so I think this result is more than just soft factors. I think it's a reminder that there is a bit of a glass jaw, even in the FA Cup game, which I know we lost. I think we had a little bit of the better of it, having made changes away to City. The fear factor for this City team is different. And I know Haaland is a scary proposition by himself. But is it fair to say that the loss today just confirms, I think, that we're probably not looking at a City that goes on a run to 97 points a season? Not to say they can't win the title with 89. We still got to do the job. But it doesn't look like a 96, 97 point City team to me right now.
Yeah, it hasn't looked like this for a while. I've been watching them a little bit, and I sort of said it a couple of weeks ago that it wasn't peak City. And the reason why, when I looked at them compared to us when we were absolutely cooking, when the ball goes into wide areas, we accelerate the game. We immediately get into our running, accelerate the game. And when it goes into wide areas to City, they sort of stop the game, come back inside, and then recycle again. A bit like what we used to be like. Then De Bruyne accelerates the game. Well, they just don't seem to be picking De Bruyne on a regular basis. So that's an issue. When he gets the ball, everyone starts to move because they trust him. Bernardo and Gundogan, I can't see him. Mahrez looking good. Grealish looking very good. But they weren't near the team a couple of years ago because Jesus was playing, Sterling was hot, Sane was playing. And so what those players had is the ability to run through, diagonal runs. So when they go one side, they run through on the other side and really penetrate teams. That penetration isn't there for me. And that's a bit that always worried me. They can get you, kill you, run you around, shuffle, and suddenly, bang, stab you in the heart, run straight through you. That stab isn't there. So everyone's looking for one person. And some people say, oh, he's not getting the ball early enough, directly enough. On occasions, I'm sure that's true. But also, some teams want you to try to get the ball through to Haaland, like Spurs, for example. Yeah, go on, do a Cedric cross. Go on then. You do one, and we'll pick it up, and then we'll run straight through you. Right, and people got to recognise that. Spurs want you to cross it from bad places. So holding it is actually quite good. De Bruyne, when he puts it in, hard to defend, right? So they're not where they were, and I do feel Pep's already made noises about this. There's two things on the horizon. They got the Champions League. They really want it. His legacy will not be changed by another league. He needs a Champions League. So there's a little bit of sometimes players on the bench, you think he's saving them for those key games. So if we're ahead and they've got a Champions League decision to make, they're going to make that decision, aren't they? And potentially lose focus. And secondly, Pep's sort of spoken about a number of players in the end of the season wants to have a discussion with. I think they are about to have the rebuild of all time in the summer. They haven't really spent massively on net spend. They've got money in the bank. They're not skin. And they've just spent a lot of money to get Haaland in. Pep signed his new contract. I think he'll be sitting down with the execs and saying, okay, we need to go. Hence why I think what we spoke about the transfer window with Caicedo and players like that, why Arsenal trying to get these players ahead, what they know what's going to happen. There are three clubs, there are two clubs in historic clubs, Liverpool, Man United, about to change ownership. When that happens, money. Look at Chelsea, money. Do you see what I mean? And then you've got City rebuilding at the same time. I mean, you know, this is going to go. And by the way, Newcastle's sitting there. So Arsenal really need to go early and go hard to get the players who are going to make us stay ahead of these teams. Because when they press the pedal, mate, it's going to be tough. So yeah, that's where I am with it, Elliot. It's almost projecting forward. We really are seeing a City in transition while still being our chief rival.
Yeah, and I mean, they got Bristol City in the next round of the FA Cup. So presumably they'll be through there. So they'll have more FA Cup. They may go deep in the Champions League. And if they do go deep in the Champions League, maybe you're in a situation where Arsenal go into the Etihad when they've got a semifinal on the horizon, right? If you look at their April, they got to go to Brighton. They got to play Liverpool, who are not very good, but those games always feel tight. They got to play us. And then they finish the season at a rejuvenated Everton that may be trying to stay up, home to Chelsea, at Brentford. All while they may have FA Cup final and Champions League final, or you know, in, on the horizon. So it is certainly the case that while we will have to be very good to win this title in the face of the challenge of Manchester City, I think today is a reminder, and I say today because we're recording on the Sunday just following City's loss, that this may be a team in a bit of transition, as Clive has said, that it may be a team that is prioritizing competitions. It still feels to me like this all points right at that game at the Emirates next week, midweek, because a win there, I think, will give our team, our group of players, that last bit of belief that we can now just go do this. And it will not be straightforward, and there'll be unexpected results, but there will be for City too. And that's the reminder. You know, Paul, as we shift gears to the Everton game, I think the reaction to the Everton game in some circles was more severe than it needed to be. And I can understand why. First of all, we hadn't lost since the Old Trafford game, and that was a loss we came away feeling pretty good about in some ways in terms of our performance. And because I think there's, like I said, there's that imposter syndrome. But, you know, there's going to be losses. I mean, it's just that simple. And hopefully not a lot of them, but there may be two more. There may be three more, and you may still win the league with that. But this is a loss that I think hurts because it was a poor performance. And so let's get into, firstly, just the opposition we faced and how different it was than what it might have been had it been the other manager in a few weeks earlier. I mean, they cut this pitch nice and short, had it lumpy and you know, playing a little bit bumpy and just not an easy pitch to play on. Again, I'm not excusing our poor performance pitch, just saying they were physical, they have that size, they were going to play Dyche football, and they did with incredible energy. And so I think right out of the block, the first thing about this game that you noticed was how up for it they were. You know that Goodison Park would have been a toxic place 2 weeks ago. Today they had a reason to be up for it. And so it all conspired to be that kind of day where, for me, it was going to be about the first goal. But early on, I felt that they laid a marker down, right, in terms of how physical they were going to be, how direct they were going to be, and the kind of challenge that we were going to have to face. And I'll level with you. I don't think we looked totally ready for it. I don't think we looked fully ready for the challenge we were going to face from this Everton side from kickoff.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm sure everybody knew what was coming. Everybody prepared themselves. But if you've ever jumped into freezing cold water, prepare yourself all you like. Once you go in there, you're like, oh my God, I'm drowning. I can't breathe.
By the way, just real quick, did you see what Mikel said at full time?
About
their style? Yeah, he said, credit to Burnley. he reverted right because they looked like they're doppelgangers. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. There's a great, somebody was sharing on the Twitters, there's a great coach's corner with Sean Dyche talking about how he sets up. And like, it was absolutely what they did here. And he's got, you know, he's got Cody, he's got Tarkowski. I mean, it's a dream for him. He's got that muscular midfield with Gueye, Doucouré, Onana. He kept them compact. Two guys out on our wingers. So Saka, Martinelli struggled to do anything from there. They moved together as a block. I mean, it was really good shit, if you like that kind of thing. Pep should have been noticing it and taking notes, I think. And like we always have a very fast start in the first half. We didn't have that. We did have it in the second half. The second half's different. The second half's better, ironically. It's where we concede our goal. We're still not good
enough. Until the subs, but we'll come on to that.
Yeah. We're still not good enough. We still don't create enough quality chances. But actually, you can see our football in the second half. Now we have been in the freezing cold water. We know how fecking cold it is. We go out for the second half, and we bring that fast, blistering start. Now, it's not the most blistering start we've ever had. It's not the best start, but the football's there for a while. And so like, it's you just can't get away from saying, holy shit, Sean Dyche knows how to coach a team to be structured, solid, compact, and just negate everything you can do. And for a while he does. And then they get up the pitch around 20 minutes. They start, you know, that was their other thing. Go long, flick on headers with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, get connect with the wingers, get some corners, start banging crosses. They, what, 3-4 corners around 20 minutes. And I think that kind of changed the tone of the game for them. That was when they, them and the crowd said, yeah, we're really in this game now. We can do some damage down the other end. And like first half, they could have scored 1-2 goals. And we were struggling with them. You know, there was a Gabriel slip when he had, I think it was Ducouré in front of him for a header for a ball coming in.
35th minute, header, heads it down and wide, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, DCL with his toe on the ball as it fizzed across. I think that was Onana from the left-hand side. That was the Odegaard giveaway, yeah.
For the people who do pay attention to XG, I think Calvert-Lewin might have touched that, because if you look at the XG map, there's like a 0.85 XG or something like that shot right in the middle of the first half, and that's the only one I can think of. That's the one where the ball gets slid right across the corridor of uncertainty, as you're saying, 34th minute, and Calvert-Lewin just about doesn't get there, and that was after a white giveaway, who we may come on to in a moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of feel in the first half, they kind of killed us. Like, it took us a while for them to get going, but, like, they would have come in at the end of the first half thinking, that was fucking great. That is exactly what we were hoping for. Defensively nullified us. On the attack, they created the really dangerous situations. But the second half is a different animal, and I'm much more heartened that we got our head around that. And maybe we weren't looking for an education. We weren't looking to be improved. We weren't looking for a life lesson. But it might actually stand us in good stead in the second half. But as I mentioned before, it is the half we conceded a goal. So
yeah, that's the small problem. It's funny because I take notes as I watch just to try to remember the key moments. My first note isn't until the 16th minute, and it was Saka just got a finger in his eye. That's how the game was going. My first note was Saka just got a finger in his eye. This was what I wrote at halftime, and I want to get your take on this and how we tried to break them down. Because I tend to think one of the most important things you can do as a coach is change it when it's not working. But equally, one of the most important things you can do as a coach is not overreact to a single performance and start looking to change things that have generally been working. Generally, our football works. It didn't work in this game. And what I wrote at halftime for myself was, we need an extra option in the middle, or Partey and Xhaka have to move it faster when they go out wide. And then I wrote this: I'm not sure you can break down a defense like this if neither fullback overlaps. Saka did better than Martinelli, who was a bit sloppy, but both of them found themselves isolated on two men out wide. The ball was slow in getting out wide. If you look, there was a touch map, and Martinelli's all the way on the touchline. There's a cluster of Odegaard and White and Nketiah and Partey and Saka on the right, and Martinelli all the way out wide. And as I watched a little bit of this again, I didn't do the full Paul, but I did watch a bit of it again. Martinelli's in space. There's space for him there, but it's slow getting to him, and Everton's able to shift their defense over to him well. So what do you think we weren't doing to exploit their defense that allowed them to keep it so organized and really just isolate our wide men out on the touchline?
So it may be better to talk about what Everton did. Would that be
Please
to do that? Mm-hmm. I think they did the 4-5-1, but they played their in their front three. They sort of had their two wide men really narrow in I can't remember who they were now. I think one was McNeil, and I can't remember the other one now, but it's gone. But two wide men narrow. And so what that does is, I think it's Iwobi, sorry. Iwobi, isn't it? Really narrow. And so they're narrow when they're in possession. So when they lose it, they've got good distances, right? So that's good. They're not looking to go down the sides. They want to stay nice and compact. And they want to make Arsenal think, well, the only way you can go is down the side. So the real heroes of this system was Iwobi and McNeil, because they ran back in to double up and can create that wall to Odegaard. Because if we do our football, get it in, out, and out to Saka always finds the exit. Always. You know, and when he gets to Odegaard and he's got everything in front of him, then we go. Then we rock, then we roll. People roll off, they move over reverse. We get 1-2 in Saka. We go out to Martinelli. We see all the things we like to see. So I've only seen two teams stop us properly. But Leeds did it their own way. Leeds just overran us, you know, and they won the XG on the day, but we beat them. I think Game State allowed that to happen. Newcastle, stopped us, but we were much better than them, and they just happened to get a result on the day by just doing a good defensive job. But Everton did a good defensive job, but also created chances. So they've been the best team that we've played statistically, I think. Elliot, you'll tell me otherwise, right? So it felt that way. So they wall off both sides. They wall off Martinelli to Xhaka, and they wall off Saka to Odegaard. And that's a really key thing, and to sustain it. And they got the goal at the right time, which gave them energy to sustain it for the full 90. And so I looked at it a little bit today, and not massively, but I think I said, okay, how can you do this then? So when you go outside to your wide man, you've got to decide, what are you going to do? So an overlapping fullback is great. It's a great idea. I'm not saying it's wrong, but then you leave yourself exposed, right? So you have to change your shape slightly and do something else. But what you can do, you can switch, do what we did yesterday, get it in, out to Saka, back and around. But then on the next phase, you do a diagonal, but you really overload the half space. We've got to create new patterns here. Sometimes when Eddie and Saka need to be on the outside of the furthest away centre-back, and then maybe from Sinchenko does a diagonal to the two of them. So you're creating stress by having two players close together. I didn't like our effective distances between our front three. And there's no connectivity. I just had a quick look while you and Paul were talking, because the ideal game for me was Manchester United. And I look for the connections between Saka, Martinelli and Odegaard. That's what you really want, those three. If those three are connecting, then you're on. Martinelli to Odegaard against Manchester United, seven times they connected. Seven times. In this game, it was once. You know, Saka against Manchester United and Odegaard, seven times. And this game, it was five times. I mean, Odegaard's not getting the ball in the right areas. If he gets in the right areas, like against Spurs, things happen. You know, and that's the key thing. If you block him off, then things stop happening. Then you're relying on other players to do things. And then if they're not hot, then we start to look around and say, what can we do now? So what we did do was make like-for-like changes, which I'm sure you're going to talk about earlier. Like-for-like changes.
Yeah,
and we saw more of the same. So you have to give credit to the opposition, because when those two wide men did get beaten, sorry, the two Everton wide men got beaten, then Onana and Gay would come in and smash you, making three men out there. And they wouldn't let the ball come out of that area. They built a big wall and stopped it getting into our centrality. And I thought we lacked centrality. I thought we lacked physicality and presence straight down the middle. And we weren't attracting them. And we didn't move their centre-backs around enough. And they did it very, very well. We were beaten. And sometimes that has to happen. Hopefully we can learn a lesson from it. And it looks like today on a Sunday, as we record, it hasn't cost us anything versus City, but it has versus Manchester United, by the way. But it hasn't cost us anything versus City. So we learn a lesson that's not too expensive. No red cards, unlike Manchester United and Spurs. No red cards. We can just take the lesson. And maybe it's time to develop a new pattern for this opposition. Because these types of oppositions are the only ones that worry me. Big body, 4-5-1 teams that protect the central areas make us want to cross it. That's the only thing that worries me. Jesus took those worries away. He's not here. So this is what we have to fix if you want to do what you're going to do this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing with Eddie Nketiah is we went from being like, I hope we can be okay without Jesus, to this inane idea that we're better without Jesus. Nketiah is better than, he doesn't even get back in the team, right? We swing so wildly when someone kicks the ball in the back of the net a bit. But all along, there's been this little suspicion. Does he get on the ball as much? Like we called out in the Manchester United game, Martinelli and Nketiah exchanged zero passes. In this game, they exchanged one pass, and it created the best chance we created all game. When Martinelli came interior, and he fed it out wide to Nketiah, and Nketiah cut it back to Odegaard for a shot from the center of the box that he didn't hit, didn't strike cleanly. The fact is, Eddie Nketiah is a fox in the box. He's good at running in behind. He's not going to win those 40, 60s, 30, 70s like Jesus does. He's not going to win fouls in the middle of the pitch. He's not going to get you out of trouble with those big bodies, Clive. And I think this is not a knock Nketiah thing. This is our opinions maybe, the pendulum of them swings maybe a little too wildly. And I think in this game, the things that Eddie Nketiah doesn't give you maybe showed up a little more than they have since he's come into the team.
Yeah, maybe. And I think the coaching message to Eddie and the others will be, when we're struggling and they're cutting off our primary routes, let's just work in connectivity in the top end of the pitch. let's just try work really hard to be mobile, rotate, get our connections back, because they broke our connections. And we then, I thought we lacked a bit of patience to keep our connections going. Focus on connecting, focus on our distances, being nice and tight, and just focus on stressing them. Get touches, Eddie. Get touches. You know, get as many touches as you like. We said yesterday, wasn't it? We like to see 40, 50 touches from our front four. Eddie had 21 in this game. You know, Saka had 87. Martinelli was about 30-odd-ish, something like that. It's not enough. We want 50 for all of them. Because then we know we're stressing teams in four different areas. We don't want one person to have too many touches. That means they're keen on him. That means they're bullying him. That means they're keen on him. It won't work. We just watch Harry Kane scored 267 goals for Spurs. Great goal scorer. But they need more than him. They need more than him to get the trophies. Having one person scoring goals is enough. Having one person have all the touches is not enough for us. Let's get back to the...
Clive, they do have the Audi Cup. Like, look, okay. I know we're biased, but let's be honest at least.
Yeah, we want equilibrium. We want 50 touches each. We know we're hurting people. Good connectivity. That's Arsenal. That's when you look on paper, you see us. That's what I want to see. When we get back to that, we'll be fine. I guarantee you, get that equilibrium of numbers, then we'll be back to ourselves.
And also, Eddie's going to really pay off in broken play, right? He's going to pay off with scrambles in the box, deflected shots, broken play, transition. The defense isn't set. But, Paul, you can't have broken play when they just go over the top of your press. And if you look at their pass map, I mean, it's crazy, especially in the first half. They completed 83 passes in the first half. They attempted like 122. They're all long, straight lines. If you can look at a pass map from this game, all you're going to see from Everton are the longest, straightest lines you've ever seen. Some diagonals, a lot of boots long. And I think, in a way, there's a cleverness to that. I mean, we tend not to think of direct football as being particularly savvy, but if you have a team that's incredibly organized, that's way up the pitch, and that can press the crap out of you, if you can go long to a player like Calvert-Lewin or to an Onana who they went long to, you know, and win the first ball, they won so many first and second balls, then you neuter some of the things that make us really effective, and especially make our center forward effective, who wants to play in those broken play moments. Maybe not so much against a settled back five, which is what they sort of compressed into when they were pushed back, almost like a 5-4-1. So what do you think about, you know, again, because I think this was the crux of it. The way we tried to break down their defense, and I can't help but focus on either we needed a focal point centrally to create more combinations, or we needed a fullback that could overlap. Like, maybe this was a day for Tierney. Maybe it was a game for Tierney to come in and get around the outside and pull a defender away so Martinelli can cut it on his right and combine, or he can overlap him. Maybe it was a day for White to be more adventurous up the right-hand side. I still don't think he looks perfectly right. So is it we needed more from Nketiah dropping in, or is it this wasn't a Zinchenko, you know, Cancelo-style day. It was an overlapping fullback day. What do you think we missed?
Look, Everton looked really effective in the first half. They created the real danger in that half. I think Clive's right that we needed to actually to be a little bit patient. And in the second half, you can see it, the football emerges and we start moving it around. We have some really good moves from back to front. Like, one of the ways to break these guys down is to pull them out, to bring them deep, to stretch them out. And like, we had wave after wave of them coming at us, getting into the game, and then we'd swing at the length of the pitch. Really good moves, really good counters. Still never quite created enough opportunity in the box itself, but we had plenty of attacking. Like, you can just see our football in the second half. Not as much as you want, not enough to tilt it that a goal was inevitable, but we had the kind of play I don't think Arteta is going to look at the second half and say, oh, we needed to do something drastically different. He's going to say, we needed to do that, but a little sharper, a little crisper. We didn't get it going in the first half. Maybe there's a certain inevitability here with who we were up against. I think he's going to look at the second half and say, we needed that to be better. He's going to look at, yes, Jesus could have given us a little bit more in that second half in terms of connectivity. We don't have that for now. I actually think Eddie's second half is okay. He actually does some connecty stuff, does some clever things, gets into good situations. You start to see it.
Would you say some of that, though, was when he and Martinelli started to swap positions at times? Because I have notes around 56 and 58 minutes where they sort of switched. Martinelli was coming across into central spaces. Eddie was moving out into the channel, and those were some of the better moves we had. I mean, so do you think that it was a shift in approach, or that just sort of happened organically?
I think that happened organically. Like Martinelli will do that, like that particular play when it comes up through Martinelli and then Eddie's along the left wing. That's that classic move where Martinelli sweeps into midfield to receive as we're playing out from the back, picks it up, and Eddie kind of, he's a little to the left, and so he stretches left. But what you want to see is that movement and understanding with those guys. So, like, you do start to see us playing our football in the second half, and the more dynamism. You see Zinchenko becoming freer and freer, switching sides at times with Partey. And, like, I think I get why he went. We're going to talk about the subs, and you're against like for like in this scenario, for example. Well, I'll let you explain that. But I kind of get why he went. I don't get why he took Partey off. Don't get me wrong. Partey was, I think in the first half, we had one player who played fecking great. It was Partey. He was
swinging. Do we have any update, Paul, that it was injury related?
I have not seen anything on Partey.
I haven't either, yeah. But we haven't been very good about giving up that information.
We haven't. But I was watching him like a hawk in the few minutes. When I went back and looked at it, I was watching him like a hawk before he came off, and like you would say, he was flying. So it was kind of an odd one that he brought. He brought on two subs at the same time, didn't he? He brought on Trossard.
Jorginho and Trossard for Partey and Martinelli at 59
minutes. Yeah. And I get the Trossard one. Don't really get the Jorginho one. I think Jorginho was fine, but he's not Partey. And Partey has a whole other side to his game in terms of his dynamism and physicality. I think Jorginho was okay doing Jorginho stuff, but why you'd take off Partey, I don't get.
It's what you lose less than about. It's not as much about what, anything Jorginho does wrong. It's what he doesn't do right. And let's be honest, too. We're human beings. It is still too fresh for me that Jorginho is a Chelsea stalwart. Seeing him come on the pitch, like, I justified that signing within an inch of my life, and I can still justify it. But the fact of the matter is, when he stepped on that pitch in an Arsenal shirt, it was still hard for me to want him out there. That's just where I'm at psychologically.
I distribute my disgust in unequal amounts. So I have far less disgust for Jorginho. I need it for Azpilicueta, Reece James, those guys. I'm not wasting it on Jorginho. He was always like vanilla for me.
Okay, well, that's fair. There are ones I hated more there, but they're all in the same category of Chelsea overall. But like, sorry, I want to. We're going to do more on the subs in a big way because I think it's a real opportunity to dig into a plan B, whether there needs to be a plan B at Arsenal or just more plan A. But Clive, we missed a bit of a trick on the instant reaction. We didn't do stock risings. We did double stock fallings. It was in the moment. It's how we felt. It's how you felt. When it's funny because we got on and I was like, all right, guys, for this pod, and Clive said double stock falling. That's all he said, just double stock falling. And I was like, wow, okay. Guess we're doing double stock falling, guys. But I do think that Saliba and Gabriel Magalhaes deserve praise because this is a hard game, a battling game, a combative game, a big side, lots of long balls, lots of aerial duels, lots of ground duels. And also, by the way, they really had to start a lot of ball progression because we weren't able to win the ball back as high up the pitch, right? Because they were playing over our press. So, but I thought they were both really good. I don't have any issues. I mean, I know Gabriel slipped that one time, as was mentioned, for the Decore header that he headed wide. But other than that, I thought it was a really good game from our center backs. And in general, because we didn't score, there's going to be a lot of focus on what didn't go right up the other end. Do you want to take a moment to praise Saliba? And in particular, Gabriel, who I think it's the best center back pairing in the league right now. I don't think it's particularly close.
Yeah, there's not much I can add to that, really, from a praise perspective. they played very well, Elliot. I think on the goal, I will say that Saliba got blocked out on the goal to get to the back post and left Odegaard a little bit naked, but they blocked him off really well and they focused on that area. I did not, you know, he did make a couple of clearances in that back post area, but he couldn't get there on the goal. And that's life, mate. You've just met experienced Saunders, set beat coach. So good luck with that. But everything else, he just looks great. And much like, you know, goalkeepers, I think centre backs give you a feeling of how they make you feel. And when we look at those two, we don't have too many worries, do we? We don't really look at them and say, okay, what if they had a bit of this or a bit of that? They've got everything, you know, the speed, the power, the jumping, the on-ball ability, down the side running and penalty box defending in the air. Very cool under pressure. I like them both a lot. And we've got Kivior in behind them. It's getting loads of rave reviews without getting on the pitch yet. It's going to be so interesting to see how he develops into an Arsenal player. But those two is not an issue. I'll still go back to the game slightly earlier because your point about Kieran Tierney is in my head now.
And yeah, I was going to ask you about it, actually. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's quite an interesting one for all of us listening and us here now talking to each other. When you watch a game that doesn't go so well, I think it's really interesting to see what we walk away with. Mm-hmm. We walk away with a couple of things in our mind. And it's down to your personal way you look at football, right? So when I was watching the game live, I was thinking, you know what? We need to get in behind them. We need to run through. We need to pull them out and run through. I just couldn't stop saying it. I tweeted out, we've got to run through. We've got to run through them. Spin, spin, spin. Because they were being brave by squeezing up on us. They've got no pace. So we're really saying Arsenal are going to keep playing to feet. We know they are. So we need to spin. I'm thinking, go on, Eddie, spin channel. Just do it. Just spin channel. Create the room for us to play. We didn't spin enough. We didn't work hard enough off the ball. We still wanted to come to the ball. So you're thinking, you know what? I need overlapping fullback. Get Tierney on. You know, get White to go forward. Then you realise that Zinchenko plays inside, so White's going to see it. That's not going to work. So let's get Tierney on so he can run around the outside. You're not wrong. It's just another way to run through. So we're saying the same thing, just different solutions. You see what I mean? Mm. And we say, okay, we need to have a bit more centrality. So Eddie, can you roll in a little bit more? Great combinations, great touches. So we can then go out second phase. We're all correct. It's what you choose to do. And what's more interesting, what me and you say to each other, is what Mikel will take away from this game as his lesson. Because this is twice now that we've been stopped scoring against Newcastle and against Everton. And it's very similar.
You know,
so you've got to learn that lesson now. So what are we going to do? How are we going to solve it with the current personnel? One person to come back in. So yeah, that's the issue. That's the issue. One person coming back in. How can we solve it? And I am interested to see what he does. You know, I'm generally not sure what he's going to do, but it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. There are teams waiting to do this to us. I'm not sure which ones, but against City and against those sort of teams who want to play us, Brentford might have a go, but against City, they're going to play us. So we're going to have to win our duels, our one-on-ones, and our technical ability will come to the fore, or it won't, right? But these teams who don't try and play us and try to play off our mistakes and square passes, they're the ones we struggle with, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and let's face it, like not every team that wants to play this way has players that can win first balls the way Everton do. Not every team that wants to play this way has Sean Dyche, who, whatever you think of him, he is really a master of setting teams up this way. You know, he's really good at it. They played for corners. You called this out on the instant reaction, Clive, but I think it was in my mind as well. I even noted it. Ball goes out for throw-in instead of corner. Everton crowd boos. Like, you know, like it was rolling towards the corner flag, and it rolled just outside the throw-in side of the corner instead of the corner side of the corner flag. And it was literally like, they just missed a chance because they knew they were playing for those physical moments. So I don't think there's necessarily a blueprint here for beating us. I think these types of teams that play these types of ways are always tricky. And the key is always the first goal, right? Because if they have to come out and try to come back into the game, that's when they get slaughtered, right? When they have to be stretched. If they never have to be stretched, then, you know, they can sit in their shape and play long and hope.
This is the perfect Sean Dyche game, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Work, 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 work. Make sure you get Odegaard and Saka. If you can hobble them early, that would be great. They did that, right? Poke Saka's eye.
Odegaard got a nasty kick on the Achilles. Saka got a finger in his eye, and there is a still shot of it where it looks like the finger is about an inch and a half into his eye socket. It is very, very hard to look at.
So when you see that, you think, well, we're in trouble there. And then if you get a set piece, that's great, and then we've got something to hold on to. You know, we lost to Burnley at home once, didn't we? And they didn't have a shot on target, Aubameyang old goal. Remember that one? Very depressing moment. This is classic stuff, and it all went his way. And fair play to him, he did it again.
I think one of the tricks of watching football, too, is you got to watch what happens off the ball. You can't just watch what happens on the ball. When I first started watching football, I really, really struggled with that. All my evaluations were what happened on the ball. Watch the Chelsea game the other day against Fulham. Mudryk gets taken off at halftime. It's not because Mudryk did anything wrong on the ball. He didn't do a whole lot. It's because I have not seen a more shocking off-the-ball display than Mudryk's lack of awareness, lack of readiness, lack of contribution, finding space, defending back. You got to watch what happens off the ball. And the Martinelli performance, Paul, is an interesting one because Martinelli was sloppy and his form is not great right now. But there's just a lot of space out on that touchline because of the way we were playing with clusters on the right and Martinelli all the way. He was disconnected from the group. And that was by design. That's the only way you can look at it. There were runs that weren't played. There were opportunities that weren't given to him. I mean, he really did have space and we were not moving the ball fast enough. We did not show the urgency. But what he did on the ball was really poor by and large. And so I think if you watch the off the ball stuff and the runs he made and the availability he had and the, you know, the space that was there, I think you see a missed opportunity. If you just look at the on the ball stuff, I think you see a player who, you know, was a little sloppy and a little off his game again. So how do you evaluate Martinelli's current form? Because again, I cannot get away from the idea that like this is two games in a row now where he had no passes to or from Nketiah in the United game. And one pass to Nketiah and no passes from Nketiah. And when your fullback is playing in midfield and your eight is Xhaka and your center forward is not exchanging passes with you, you are on an island, my man. And that is really where that left wing position is. And for him, it's not really working right now, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I don't really get it in a way in that Zinchenko's on his side. There should be enough going on between those three. Okay, he doesn't have Gabriel Jesus, but
he's not pulling defenders away. You know what I mean? He's not doing what Tierney would do, which is force a defender to make a decision, right? He's not pulling defenders away. And he can't 1-2 with Nketiah because Nketiah is not coming over there. And that's not Shaka's game. So how do you beat the defense other than just trying to dribble two guys every time?
Just triangles and moving guys around. And like they got to do it better. I know I've said this a few times. I don't sense that Martinelli per se is off form, but I don't think his performances have shown us very much recently. If you see the difference, I think it's a bit more system. Like, and if you're not having that much fun, like it will take a little bit off your form. You just won't be quite as believing in your stuff. But I don't sense there's anything there. I don't think he has some kind of World Cup hangover or anything like that. Now, can I prove that to anybody? No. He looks up for it. He looks bright. He looks sharp. But he's not as good at beating two guys over on his side of the box as Saka is.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Saka, I mean, even Saka struggled in this game. They were very organized. But still, he minced those guys and had them spinning around at times. Not quite as much Martinelli's game. He really needs the interplay. He doesn't have Gabriel Jesus, so he loses that. But he's got more Zinchenko than he did earlier in the season. He's having him game after game here, and they should be able to conjure stuff. And yes, it's Xhaka, but Xhaka makes good runs out to the touch to kind of start a triangle, a kind of a rotation between those three guys. They should be able to do better than this. What you see with Martinelli, and we've said this a couple of times, I think we said it for this game, and maybe it was the United game, but we've said after he gets taken off, we say, well, he didn't have a great game, but he got better. He actually got better before he was subbed. And what you see in the second half is just a bit more space and therefore a bit more movement, and he starts coming into his own. But yeah, it's definitely a problem. I'd almost say it's a problem area for us in that, and it's not all on Martinelli. He's not going to be able to do what Saka does, but he can get it done in other ways with combinations and getting Zinchenko and Xhaka to start their rotations. Like, the second half's just better. I'm now, as we're chatting, I'm watching it for the third time here, and the football is there.
Like a good use of your concentration and focus.
Yeah. we're just much better than in the second half. If it was all like that and they hadn't scored, we'd still say we should have created a bit more threat in the box. There's definitely something still missing there in terms of accessing the box in more dangerous situations. And it's definitely the case that White's back, so Saka's having to do a lot of work. The wingers have to do a lot of work in this game. And there's just something slightly off in how we're moving them around. We're not as It's probably all down to Deitch and Everton and the structure they still have in the second half, because we're just not getting the same level of movement. Where we're really dangerous in the second half is when we do those transitions and we move it up the pitch and we swing it from one side to the other. Otherwise, we still kind of struggle. Trossard, I think, does okay, but not great. And I think everybody struggled against the structure they had around their box.
Yeah. Clive?
Yeah, just to add a bit on that, I think if you look at the ideal Arsenal team performance, right, we have Partey in the middle, we have our two eights either side connecting with our wide man, and we're doing it in slightly different ways. Odegaard comes to the ball, creates secondary passes and secondary creativity, and what Xhaka does, he's either a wall pass or he runs through to collapse the defence. Normally, Jesus will come out when Xhaka runs through on the piston, create a 1-2, and Martinelli gets shots. So Martinelli's not getting shots, right? Is Xhaka running through? Check his average position in this game. He was not running through, mate. He was half and half. He was not. And you talk about World Cup hangover, there's one to discuss right there, by the way. It's not being spoken about. There's one to discuss right there. Right, so he's not running through. So Martinelli's not getting any distraction. You talk about overlapping fullbacks here. We had an underlapping number eight. And that creates the same distraction for Martinelli. So if your number eight's not underlapping, or he's not that giving you the wall pass and being creative and inventive, then he's having to do all the work on his own. So what's he doing? He's passing back to Gabriel, Big Gabby. That's what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's it. And if he is passing to Odegaard seven times, underlying there's a message there that he shouldn't be passing to the right eight that many times. Really, in our structure, I'm not saying that's anything
wrong.
Where's
the left eight?
Where's the left eight? Right. So, so it's about where you go. So, but that's Everton. That's the impact on them. Xhaka's thinking, you know what? Look at Onana, Doucouré, and Gay. I can't leave Partey in his own, so I better sit in here a bit more. Right. So, what's the impact of that? Martinelli's on his own. Right. How do we get near him? Eddie, you've got to work harder across both sides. That's what you really got to do, because we've got a job on here in centre mid. We can't leave it open because they will transition through us. And that's the game. That's the reading of the game, feeling the game.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And changing your game model, your structure, what's required on this day. What's required on this day is not, I better score a goal. No, not today, mate. Come in, be a true tip of the diamond player and connect side to side with your wide men, because our number eights are having a battle. They're getting their legs kicked off them. So you need to... on this day, we probably could have done better with a peak Lacazette, if you know what I mean by that. Somebody that didn't even go near the goal, but absolutely fought, got free kicks, bit scrapped, connected. We would rue the penalty box, lack of penalty box at presence. But this is what I'm trying to say.
100 people lying on their sofas right now, Clive. I
use the word peak Lacazette very cleverly, right? Important now, because if you're not having the ability to run through and distract, we speak about Martinelli here. How can we get him into the game? So we spoke about earlier about what do you walk away with? Right, we walk away. We got to do this. We got one side getting his legs kicked off again, and Martinelli's not having enough impact. We've lost our triangle on that side. We've lost connections. We have to regain them in offensive areas.
And I think Arteta is going to conclude back to the discussion of what does he change, what does he do the next time round. That's why I say I'm not surprised he went like for like, because I don't think his response is we need to do something different. We need to do the things we were supposed to be doing significantly better, and he's going to stick with the same patterns better.
So I think that's what we absolutely should do going forward. I think in this game, I'd push back on that slightly, but let's do that. I want to do a big conversation about the subs here, but I also want to talk about the referee just a little, not as a mitigating factor for losing, but just because I have a question about it. I also think it's worth pointing out, like, we saw Everton have a lot of success just by shaving that pitch right down to the ground. We saw them have a lot of success just doing that. And if you want to have success in your life, then you know you need to do the same. That's right. Manscaped gives you the tools to shave it right down to the ground and
so transparent.
And achieve that success that you're trying to achieve with your below-the-belt grooming. We have an exclusive offer for you when you go to manscaped.com and use promo code ArsenalVision. You'll get 20% off and free shipping. That's 20% off free shipping when you go to manscaped.com and use promo code ArsenalVision. What are you going to get? You're going to get the Platinum Package 4.0, and the Platinum Package 4.0 is the king of the package, Lawnmower 4.0. Lawnmower 4.0 is the best purpose-built trimmer that I have ever used. You can use it on your sideburns if you want. You can use it on your chest if you want. But you know where you can use it? Down below the belt, because it has ceramic blades and skid-safe technology. So it's designed to go down there safely. And when you're going down there, you want to go down there with safety. And you do that with the Lawnmower 4.0. It's got a bright light. You can see what you're doing. It's wet, dry. You can use it in the shower. It has a fantastic long battery life, and it has wireless charging. But it's not just that. When you get to a certain age, eventually the ear and the nose hair decides it doesn't want to be in the ears and the nose anymore. It wants to be out in the world saying hello. You don't want that. You're going to use the Weed Whacker. It's the ears and nose hair trimmer. There's also the entire Platinum Package kit that comes with the 2+1 shampoo and conditioner, body wash, and deodorant. Manscaped's going to throw in the Shed travel bag and the anti-chafing boxer briefs that I use when I work out. They're fantastic. All is a free gift. So what you got to do is you got to take advantage of Manscaped's best value bundle and save 20% off and free shipping with the code ArsenalVision at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code ArsenalVision. It's time to save and shave with Manscaped. Now, if the outside of your body is looking good, the inside of your body needs to be feeling good. And the way you do that is with AG1 from Athletic Greens. Oh, come on. You know this by now. Just do it. Just put the scoop in the water, drink it down. You're done. AG1 is 75 high quality vitamins, nutrients, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, adaptogens. It's a biome in that belly of yours. And if you want gut health, if you want energy, if you want anti-aging, if you want to eliminate all the shelves and shelves of gummies and crap that you put in your body thinking that it's a vitamin, it's not a vitamin. It's just a candy that says vitamin on the package. This is what you need. It's AG1. I take it. I love it. It's helped me reduce some of my caffeine intake, and I still have energy, in case you can't tell. It's going to make your gut feel better. I'll tell you that much. That's a thing that it did do for me. And it is going to be gluten-free, dairy-free, paleo, and low sugar. So if you have any of those considerations, it's perfect for you. It's less than the price of an expensive cup of coffee a day. If a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, then Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/vision. That's athleticgreens.com/vision. Check it out. Is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Nailed it. Breathe it out. And settle and reset. And here we go. We're back. Okay. It's just your normal podcast ad read, everybody. It's just how it's done. 60% of the time, it works every time. Clive, I didn't like the subs, candidly. And I think that there are different types of games. There are games where you're doing fine, but you need a better performance from a player, right? So you're doing fine, but your winger's not playing well. Martinelli's not playing well, so I'm going to bring Trossard on because we just need a better performance from the left winger. Odegaard's not playing well, we just need a better performance from the eight, we'll bring on Vieira. And by the way, I thought both those players were not playing well, and I understand the reason to change it. But then I think there are games where it's not that any individual player's not playing well, your system is not creating the opportunities, the openings, the mismatches, the spacing that you want. And you have to change how you're trying to pick the lock, how you're trying to solve the problem, not who is trying to solve the problem. I don't think we had a who problem against Everton. I think we had a how problem against Everton. And so I wanted to see Trossard for Nketiah so that we might have a focal point at the top of the D, or Vieira for Xhaka so we had another more overlapping, underlapping, attack-the-box, mindsetted left eight, potentially, or a Tierney for Zinchenko, so we had an overload on the left to pull a defender away. For me, this wasn't a who problem. Martinelli, Odegaard aren't playing well. Let's sub off Martinelli and Odegaard. It was a how problem. Our left eight's not giving us that extra man in the box. Our left fullback isn't overlapping. Our center forward isn't giving us a focal point. So I would have preferred to make changes that change the system. So for me, it would have been Trossard for Nketiah, or it would have been Tierney for Zinchenko, or it would have been Vieira for Xhaka. I understand the players he took off weren't having great games, so I'm not being critical of that. I just think it wasn't as much about the quality of the performance as it was the approach. Do you feel somewhat, or at all, or even a little bit, or even a tiny, tiny, tiny bit similar to what I just described?
Well, a little bit. I wasn't
good. I'll take it.
On Partey, for example. I've been, you know, I think he's needs a bit of a break, and we don't know how much he trained. So,
I forgot to bring that one up. I'm still assuming it's that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. So I'm just gonna. They see him every day, right? So there is something that we used to do that we stopped doing. So remember when we played Fulham, we went down, and we took off a fullback, and we went. we played wing backs. We played three at the backs, a traditional three at the back, and then put Martinelli and Saka as wing backs and played two strikers. Right, so there was a potential to do that in this game. And I don't care. We're 1-0 down at that time. If we lose 2-0, I ain't bothered. But let's put the pressure, let's change the show, right? Let's go back to maybe have Martinelli and Eddie down the middle. We Trossard as left wing back, Saka as right wing back, and make you changes from there on in, right? So we have centre backs on the pitch. It's not a big addition to bring, say, there's enough substitutes to make that system work. And just say, we're going to do something different. We go two up top with wing backs and have, say, Vieira in behind them and go like that, you know? So that's an option. But it's, like I say, we've been so good. You know, so good in how we play. And maybe two or three times out of 30, you know, nearly 30 games this season, have we looked down and thought, this ain't us. Do you know what I mean?
Agreed.
Even against Old Trafford, we were like buzzing for a period and we just got sucker punched when we were getting too excited. You know, so it's just, I'm not overly worried, but we have tried that two up front system when Jesus and Eddie were both fit. Let's not go away from that because we can do it in Martinelli. Let's try it. Let's make sure we can go, if we go down in a game, let's go back to something that was part of our strategy pre-season and we used in the season and it really worked. If we go down, maybe that's our go-to system. And some people will say, well, don't panic. It's only one goal. Keep doing what you're doing. If it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you've panicked too soon. You're showing pressure, blah, blah, blah. But it's something to remind the listener about. It's something that we did do and we stopped doing it. You know, so whether the personnel you agree with, ones I've chosen, you can put Tierney on to do that left wing back role. Do you know what I mean? It's just a system I think would work, a change up maybe for the last few minutes. But hey, that's it. On the substitutions, we always do say, we say, yes, didn't we? We do substitute bingo when we lose, right? And we look. I think he's really improved his in-game management. I think he's really got better. We talk about it a lot less. A lot less. And even in this game, I thought, I could explain a couple of those away. I think there are signals with players. When Odegaard gets kicked early, he generally does disappear. And Vieira came on and I thought he was very neat. So if Vieira came on and was not very good, I'm not having this discussion, but he came on and he was not worried about the pitch. His ball control was adhesive, mate. And so he's bubbling. He's bubbling and he's getting close. He's getting really close to this team. And so if Odegaard gets kicked, maybe you just got to take it and say, you know what, it's not your day, mate. Let me give someone else a go, you know? And it can't be his day. He's basically player of the season for us. And if we win the league, he'll be player of the season for the league, you know? So yeah. So it's not a critique on him, but he got a bad whack. So maybe that's something we could do a little bit sooner. Partey, we sort of know about now. But I think you're right to debate it. But I do feel as though maybe we don't know the whole picture, particularly where Partey's concerned.
Tim made a comment on Twitter that I thought was interesting, that the subs had a little bit of Arteta waking up all of a sudden being like, oh, I have players on the bench. I should use those players, right? Because Jorginho came on and Trossard came on, right? And like, I can't understand the Jorginho sub at all. So I'm choosing to assume it was because Partey hadn't trained much that week and was limited and he's managing him. There is no possibility based on the performance that he did it. And there's no possibility for me that the only explanation for me for that sub is Partey wasn't fit to finish the game or he didn't believe he was fit to finish the game. And that's not even because, you know, forget whether you thought Jorginho was good or not, or you wanted him or you didn't. Partey was having a fine game and I don't see why you'd bring Jorginho on. Like, before we get off the subs, Paul, I can understand in particular the decision to take Odegaard and Martinelli off based on performance and wanting to get more from those positions. So it's not that I'm saying, how are you taking that guy off? What do you do? Like, it's more that I didn't think that would change enough of the dynamic of the game. Zinchenko's an interesting one because I thought as a player who should be in the conversation for being one of our players of the season, you know, I think him coming back and being fully fit when we lost Jesus has been as big a part of us being able to mitigate Jesus's absence as Nketiah's performance. Because we've lost Jesus' centrality and we've lost his possession qualities, but we've gained a fit Zinchenko who gives that back to us in the center of the park and can move all over and be, you know, go be where he needs to be. So I'm not knocking him, but I thought he had a bit of an off game. And as the game wore on, you know, he was taking pot shots from range and he got into that flash point with Mope. So, you know, maybe that's another one he could have looked at. So do you, I mean, just generally, the subs, forgetting whether the players that came on played well enough, do you think they were the right choice for the way the game was going?
Well, obviously, I want Partey to stay on for 96 minutes or whatever this was. Maybe they had the reasons. Outside of that, look, bringing on Trossard as a kind of a like-for-like for Martinelli, I get that because they can do some similar things differently. And Trossard's much more of a side-to-side, jinky. He's kind of like Saka to a degree. He can beat two guys on his side, and he's very dangerous when he gets in the box, very quick feet. You could just conclude, like, however you feel about Martinelli or Odegaard, you can say fresher legs with keeping the system the same and the same kinds and profiles of players-ish. Of course, they do it slightly differently, but I get bringing on Vieira and Trossard for Martinelli and Odegaard and keeping things kind of similar. If there was one thing I would have wanted to have tried, given that we were going for it, is Trossard for Xhaka, which I don't think, like we talked on the instant reaction, your thought about Trossard for Nketiah. And I just think it's a week or two early for that because I don't think we've really tried that out on the training ground at this point. Mm. But, you know, maybe we have, but maybe it's a game or two or too early for that. I don't think it requires a huge amount of training for Trossard to do the left eight. And I think if you'd had Martinelli, Trossard, Zinchenko, and you were loading it up on that side, you'd have given the defense something very, very different to think about from that side of the pitch, a very, very different dynamic. And that would have jazzed it up. And based on the subs, that's the main one I'm like, now that would be something without changing systems. Everybody basically doing something similar, but you got a very different profile, very different problem for the defense if you have Trossard as the left eight. Okay, you're going to lose out something defensively, but at that point when we're making our subs, we're already a goal down, so screw it. We don't really do draws, good old us. We either win, and we mostly win, and we occasionally lose. So we're going for 3 points here. Throw in Trossard as the left eight is the move I want to see us doing. I've not heard anything from anybody who knows Trossard well to tell me that he can't do that job, especially when we're in attack mode. I think that would have given them something to look at. I think Zinchenko was decent, good. I don't think he was bad. I just don't think he did anything eye-catching for us. And it was interesting to see the manager have to escort one more player off the pitch to stop him losing his mind as he handed Zinchenko over to one of our assistant coaches to get him safely off the pitch. That was 3 or 4 minutes after he'd had a bit of a meltdown, but he was still busy melting down. He looks like a nice fella, but he's a fiery fella too.
He should have played up when Mope kicked him. Would have had 10 men for like 90 seconds, but Mope definitely kicked out at him is my take.
Honestly, the only thing, I hear what you're saying about overlapping wingers, about Tierney and stuff, but we could have given them a lot more trouble, I think, if we'd done the Trossard left eight, I think. I think that's something you do when you want to attack and you want them all up there and you're going to load the top end of the pitch and you got 10 minutes to close this thing out. That one I like.
Yeah. Clive, do you want to answer that or do you want to get another topic? Because I'm reluctant to bring up refereeing only because then you sort of get accused of saying you're using it as an excuse. To me, we did not lose this game because of the referee, right? Like we didn't do enough to win the game, but there were some big moments. I think the one thing that I will say is the referee sets a tone, and the tone is going to favor one of the two teams when you have such contrasting styles, right? So for example, when Arsenal plays City, our styles are exactly the same. So whatever tone they set, it's going to impact us the same. But when we play a Spurs, or when we play a United, or when we play an Everton under Dyche that wants to sit in, be compact and counter, you know, Dyche, win first balls, be physical, be aggressive, the tone that's set can favor them or can favor us. And I do think that he let a lot of physical play go. Fine. you got to adapt to that. There was the penalty shout. I wrote here in my notes, it's soft. I thought it was soft. Watching it again, I do have a weird take, and I'm curious if you can connect with this. If that's Bukayo Saka who's fouled, I think we get the penalty. There's something about it being a big, strong center back who's not on the ball and isn't going to score from there. And so, you know, they kind of just, whatever, it's a 50-50. It's not really a 50-50, right? I think if it's a tricky winger getting knocked over there, maybe you get the penalty. But we didn't get it. Do you have any issue with the refereeing, and in particular, the non-call for the penalty?
Yeah, Gabriel didn't have possession. He was about to get possession, so a referee can't really give a penalty when he's not in possession of the ball, so it's very difficult for him. I'll have a broader conversation, really, about refereeing and what's happening at the moment, particularly around VAR. I sort of like the intention to try to not get involved unless, you know, something leaps off the screen or something ridiculous. I sort of like the intention. And they're trying to lift the level of physical, what's allowed physically. But even watching what I'm seeing, I'm watching all types of football and different levels, particularly in women's game. By the way, they just drew 0-0, which is a bad result, but let's not talk about it. It's what's coming into the game, Elliot, is the tactical foul and the acceptance of it. It's really becoming something that we know is very important. So we break out of a press on one side of the pitch, everything's squeezed over, we get it into the interior, and we're about to break out the other side. Now that's going to lead to a one-on-one attacking at the back line, for winger versus fullback, and players rushing over in a fast support line to support the ball carrier. That's what we play for. So what do other teams do? When we beat the press, we come inside to the interior player, they kick his legs off and say, cheers, mate, sorry, ref, and they jog back in, and nothing is done. But nothing is done. But you have to work hard, particularly when now the ball's going to players in the box. You have four or five passes to get out of the box. You come to the middle zone and you're broken the press, you're out, you're bad to go to the other side, and we're getting kicked. Not just us. I watch City today get kicked loads. Loads. Højbjerg and Dier, how many fouls did they make? Right? And it's not being punished. Referees have not caught up with the tactical changes within the game and why teams are building out from the back and what advantage it gives you if you do get out. It gives you one-on-ones against the back line. Risk versus reward. They're taking away the reward and they're not booking the players. Now, I don't want to see players get sent off. I think red card, I think the tolerance is about right. But yellow card means you stop the tactic and you allow football to flow. We are a flow-based team. If teams want to take our flow away, that's their right. If they're taking our flow away and not getting carded, then we can't play. And not just us, other flow teams in the league. So I think it's a wider referee discussion about teams that do this as a tactic, which is absolutely fine, but how it's punished and what's the line for punishment? Because you really are stopping teams who really are looking for those overloads in wide areas and taking the risk, having possession in their backdoor third to attract people on to then get out. And when you do get out, you get smashed. I'm sorry, if you're stopping the flow and you have to look at the next pass and say, look, they're going to be in here. I can't just treat it as a middle of the pitch foul. This is a last third foul. And if it's a last third foul, a yellow card comes out. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. I think the refereeing has to catch up with how the football tactics are evolving, and it's not there yet.
Yeah, I think that's right. And what's sort of an interesting byproduct of VAR is the refs are letting them play because their attitude is, I won't make the call and VAR will catch me if I miss something. VAR is only overturning it if it's a clear and obvious error, right? So the ref is letting it go for VAR to catch it. VAR is saying, well, I'm not going to overrule the ref. And so more stuff gets let go. And that is surely not the intention. But I think it's natural, right? If I'm a ref and I'm like, ooh, I think that might have been red, but I don't want to get it wrong, VAR will correct me if I'm wrong. So I call nothing. VAR looks at it and is like, I don't want to overrule the on-the-pitch ref, so I'm going to leave it alone. So you wind up getting a cascading domino effect, right, of fewer calls being given, which is going to favor
Can
teams
I say
that want to approach
on
them.
That,
yeah, go ahead.
Because I've thought about it a bit, and like that's been my fear. But I bet that's not really how it works. I bet there are some calls where the ref lets it go, And he said, they review it, and the ref tells him, "Look, guys, I didn't really see it, so give me guidance here." It's not like the ref and they stop communicating at that point. Like, not all these calls that are sent back are different. There are ones where he says, the ref sends it back and says, "Look, this is how I saw it," and they say, "Okay, here's what we're seeing." And there are other ones where he says, "Guys, I didn't see it. I think I have no idea.
Can I ask you a question? We know for sure that kind of dialogue happens between the VAR official and the ref?
Yeah, it does happen. It does happen. Okay. I mean, what you want, more often than not, is for VAR to say, "I've seen nothing too egregious to make you not to change your on-field decision." That's what you really want, you hope to see happen. Right? So for me, it's not so much the reds, because they will take care of themselves. For me, it's application of the yellows. Now, if you have five substitutes, and we've done it twice recently, where we've taken people off at halftime because they're on a yellow, and have been punished for doing things in the first half, for collisions, which have stopped breaks, stopped movements, and the referee said, "You know what? Bang, yellow card." And we've been able, because we've got substitutes, to make that change and not run the risk of a red, which we've done in previous years and suffered badly for it. Right? So referees need to punish if you're stopping promising breakaways. And it's up to the management then to decide what they do. There's enough substitute opportunities now for you to make the change so you don't go down to 10 men. You know, so I do think referees need to catch up with the evolution of the substitutes and the evolution of position play playing out from the back.
So now we have a really, really tricky thing we got to manage. We play Brentford at home on Saturday. And then we play Manchester City in midweek. And it really is a title decider in some ways. If we beat Manchester City at the Emirates and potentially go 8 clear with a game in hand, with them only playing us one more time, suddenly the math looks very, very good for us. And again, I know long, long, long way to go. But that game is, we won't play a more important game this season. Paul, it is tricky. Because the most important game of our season is the next game we play. You cannot worry about City until you have beaten Brentford. But you want to be able to go face City with everything firing on all cylinders. So on the one hand, you could say, this is a game where I'll start Trossard on the left, and I'll start Vieira at the 8, and I'll start Jorginho over Partey. But then on the other hand, you have, well, the last time I started all those guys, all my first choice guys, their football wasn't very good and we didn't look very good. And do I want to have that be the last time they played together before we go face City? I would understand some rotation to be fresh for City, but I think coming off such a, I would say one of our less good performances of the whole season, maybe this and Leeds are the only two. You don't want to go into the City game with that being the last time they all went out on the pitch. Or maybe Arteta trusts this team so much at this point and knows they will just play well against City. He can rotate. I don't know where I come down on it, because I don't want a Thomas Partey who's tired against City. Thomas Partey, I think, has the widest range of performances he can put together based on whether he's fit and firing or he's not. So I might try to get away with starting a Jorginho against Brentford. I think I'd go with all the other guys, though. I don't know. What's your take on how much to be thinking about City heading into... Look, let me rephrase that, because it's a stupid question. You shouldn't be thinking about City at all going into the game. Obviously, that's the obvious answer. But you know what I mean. How much should Mikel have that in mind in how he sets up his team for the Brentford game?
Look, if this were much later on in the season and like we were starting to struggle with fitness and injuries, I think that could be a tough question. I think it's a really easy question in this situation. You go hard against Brentford. You got enough time to recover against City. Everybody's basically fresh. Nobody's played that much recently. Nobody's, as far as we know, carrying injuries. Everybody's good. You go hard against Brentford. Like, take the Thomas Partey one. Like, if he's got an injury, that's another thing. But let's assume it's not injury, it's that he's lacking a little fitness. Well, the best way to get fit is to play. So you play him as long as it makes sense from a fitness standpoint against Brentford, and he plays hard. And that way, when he goes and plays City, he's stronger, he's fitter. If you give him the time off against Brentford, you might actually make him less fit. I mean, why do we think he might not be fit right now? It's because he kind of missed out on a full performance and was maybe resting in between because he might have had sore ribs. But like, play him for 80 against Brentford if he can only do whatever it was, What time we take them off? 70 minutes or so. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yep.
70 minutes up, play them 80, 85, if that's really an issue. There may not be any issue at all. I think the best thing you can do is go and batter Brentford, get as many players as you can involved in terms of the subs, etc., to rotate as appropriate. And then that energy you bring against City, like we're actually in a very good place in terms of some level of depth and interchangeability and fitness and no real issues and concerns that we know of. Mm. Like, this is as good as it may get for the rest of the season. It's going to start to become a grind, and then those kinds of questions will become bigger questions. But this one's a really easy one, I think.
Well, the funny thing is the players I kind of have an issue with, Clive. Set Partey aside, I think Partey's a pretty clear one that we would probably agree on. Nketiah is an interesting one. Eddie Nketiah has never played football at this cadence in his life at a high level. He's never been the starting center forward for a Premier League club. He's never been the starting center forward for anybody. And now you're talking about playing, you know, twice a week at the absolute highest level against Brentford and 4 days later against City. Eddie Nketiah is an interesting one. You could play Mope at false nine, pardon, Mope. I'm looking at Mope's name on the Trossard. On the screen here. Yeah. Yeah, you could play Trossard. Same thing. You could play Trossard at false nine or Martinelli center forward and you know, against Brentford. See how it works, for one, having Nketiah in reserve for the last 35 minutes or so and keep him fresh. Because again, he's a guy who just hasn't played this much football. I think those guys are the ones who struggle to maintain their intensity and their level because they're just not used to having to be at that level every 4 days. So he'd be a consideration for me. But again, the most important game of the season is the next game. So I don't know, Clive. Like, I think what Mikel will do is just pick his usual first choice 11 against Brentford and go try to win big, play great, and feel good going into the City game. But I'm not totally sure because... It's a really hard call. I know there are people out there that believe in rotation more and people that believe in it less. Where are you on?
Is it a hard call?
I mean, it depends on your perspective.
So when the team came out for Everton, we just didn't blink, did we? That's the team. That's the team. Move on. Right? That's the team. They've earned the right to play. They've shown us everything. Right? So if he'd have made change that team, we'd have gone, oh, why is he making those changes? I'll tell you what, Twitter would have gone off. Right. If he makes changes against Brentford after two losses, if he makes changes against Brentford, I think that'll be send a bad message. If I'm the Brentford coach, I'm saying, look, they don't care about us. They're not even playing their first team. That's extra 10%. Right. We gave it to them after we beat them 3-0 at their place. So that's motivation for them. They're on a good run of form off a 3-0 win against Southampton. Mate, we need to win. Play all the top boys. We need to win. We got people sending out Twitter pictures of our bench, right? So our bench has got stronger. So let's just play the game, win the game, hopefully, and then hopefully get
win
people
it early,
out of there.
Five subs late, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully get people out of there, you know, and then, but do that nicely. We've got enough players that need to play. Have a system to end the game with. Get people out of there, and when tonight will take care of itself. I think Saturday will be electric again. I think everyone knows we need to win.
Isn't there the really important point that, like, after loss, it's all about the bounce back and the response? I mean, that's as important as, I know the City game's huge, but like responding after a loss is huge too.
Tone. Let me answer that just real quick first, because I have a particular point about this I meant to make before you even asked that, which is, isn't the whole point though of signing a Trossard or signing a Jorginho that rotation isn't about not taking the game seriously? It's about just playing other really good players instead of playing players you don't want to be playing, you know?
I'm not there yet. I'd rather, I think the first group have earned the right to play and they should play. Yep. I think if you think about this weekend schedule, I think City are playing Aston Villa 4:30 live on TV on the Sunday. Manchester United are playing Leeds, which is a big game for them away at the 2 o'clock game. If we win our game on Saturday, 3 o'clock, we are 8 points clear. And that does things to people's minds, right? If we don't take the 4 points, that encourages them to say the next two games we can win them and we're like back in the room. Do you know what I mean? Let's do our work. Let's make sure what we do affects them. Then we roll into Wednesday with we can be real relaxed. Do you know what I mean? We can play, we're at home, it's gonna be amazing. And we can be relaxed about it. You can only control what you can control. And for tonight, sounds a little bit obvious, but for me, control the next game, win it. That's so important. And then let's talk about what City are doing and what the other teams are doing. You know, we have to put pressure on them to affect their mentality, to affect their touch around the box. We have to put pressure on them. If they feel relaxed, they can deliver, right? So we've got to make sure we win on Saturday. The most important game of the season so far for me.
Sure, totally agree. I'll also just throw this out there because I know there are people who believe it who are listening. I'm not sure I believe it, but some people do, is you should start Trossard over Martinelli, not because you're rotating for City, but because that's the player who should be starting right now. Like I said, I'm not there.
It could happen. It could happen. I'm not there yet, but if it was to happen, then so be it. We can make that decision now. We couldn't make it before, could we? You know, so
people are idiots. People are not idiots. And certainly every human being listening to this podcast is a genius. But you do see some stuff like, I mean, I saw stuff when Martinelli was subbed off that was like, we made a huge mistake giving him that contract. We should have waited till the end of the season to see if
you need to. You need to check out your Twitter timeline, mate, because that sort gets into your head.
I'm going to give people some grace. I'm going to cut people some grace because I just said people are idiots, and God knows I've been as big an idiot on Twitter as any human being on the planet. But like,
bigger.
That is true. That is a classic. Like, you need to breathe. Don't send the tweet. Get some perspective. See if you still feel that way tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like I think we live so moment to moment right now that
people
a little
don't
bit
like
of
losing.
A little bit of
that's what I've seen.
Well, I mean, I can remember times when people are saying, "Oh, Saka in the mud, Martinelli is better." And it's like, what are you doing? And then now you got people saying this: the Martinelli contract is wrong. And it's just, it's natural. It's human nature. I get it. But sometimes just the deep breath, the pause, the wait for it to marinate in your brain a little bit can help. I would say this. If it was Trossard for Martinelli, I wouldn't go into that game thinking, oh, we're not taking it seriously. You know, I wouldn't have that issue. There are some players that I think right now, you look at them and you say, are you still doing all the stuff that has made this season special? I think Granit Xhaka is in that group, by the way, not because he's playing poorly, but because is the strain of that eight role starting to tell a little bit of you know, some of the awkward fit. So there's some things to watch for. I expect us to play great against Brentford, and I expect us to play great with our first 11. I think we should leave it there because we'll be talking about that game and more on Thursday. I do think that, you know, Clive, you just put the fear in me, to be fair, because if we drop any points to Brentford, there could be a situation where at full time on next Wednesday, we are no longer top of the table. So, you know, take that game lightly at your peril.
Fuck off. You've just been playing the other side of it for 10 minutes.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, he made me real because, you know, if you do the math, right, if we drop a point, you know, if we drop 2 points and we're 6 points ahead of City and they win that game and beat us at the Emirates on goal difference, they're top now. We'd have a game in hand. Anyway, Fun with Math will be back on Thursday, so don't worry about that. We got plenty coming up for patrons. We got plenty coming up for you. Again, nothing but gratitude for you being here, even those of whom I called an idiot for bad tweets, says the man who literally tells you to block him on Twitter at the start of every podcast. Okay, hope this was fun. I have to admit, and maybe this is the message I want to leave you with. I'm in WhatsApps with friends and stuff. I've never seen it more internecine and angry and just volatile and than it was at full time after the Everton game. People being mean to each other, tearing each other apart. And I'm like, it made me realize something. It hasn't felt like it matters this much in a long, long time. We got to buckle up. It is hard being in a title race. It is nerve-wracking. Every minute feels like you're on the rack. Every minute you're behind is misery. Every minute you're ahead that the game isn't over is misery. This is going to be a rough ride psychologically, and we haven't been in one like this in a long time. It just means so much, and because it means so much, it amplifies the reaction to and sensation of what's happening. I literally felt deeply sad at full time on Saturday. I have to tell you, what happened on Sunday really helped, and I hope it helped the team as well. I think it was a big result for us in terms of flipping the narrative back and putting us in position. So I think we'll leave it there. Pause on Twitter, pause my pants. Thanks, pause.
Woohoo! It's all going to be fine.
Or not. but we're not in control of it is really the principal point. Yeah. So control what you can, which is simply your mental health. Clive's on Twitter. Clive Pavis. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
Tim is on Twitter at Stillmanator, just in case anyone's curious.
Look at you.
He's not here, but I want to make sure that you know he's on Twitter at Stillmanator, because God knows I know it. I was really happy. Andrew put out a tweet the other day about one of Tim's columns, and he added Stillberto, which is worse than me just saying it on the pod, because it turns out that that is a parody account about Tim now, ever since he gave up that handle. So, you know, we all make mistakes, but we all get it right in the end. We love you so much. Thanks so much for being here. Big, big, big week ahead and plenty to discuss along the way. We love you. We'll be back. We'll talk to you after Arsenal's time.